Good afternoon, everyone. Today is August the 17th, 2019. I am Rick Blankenship, and this is a study that I am doing for the House of David. I love your graphics, Lee. Okay, so what we're going to be talking about today is a study of Galatians. Actually, this is the introduction. Lee has it billed as a 12-part series that we will be doing at various times throughout the next year. And if it takes, you know, from my perspective, if it takes 10 sessions, that's fine. If it takes 14, whatever. We're going to go through the book of Galatians and try to establish understanding, a better understanding of what Paul is writing. Okay? So these are the things that we're going to be discussing today. First thing are the timelines. And Lee was talking just the last session about timelines of different books. We're actually going to take a look at that. And I have several timelines that we're going to compare. Then the next thing is, once we have the timelines, well, what does that mean? We're going to discuss that. The ultimate question is, where is Galatia? Then I had to throw a little bit of an interlude in there. It makes sense as you're going along, as we will be going along. Where's Waldo?
Huh.
And what's next? Okay. And actually, as I look at this, the where's Waldo should actually be where is Galatia? So, last minute changes, they always get you, don't they? Okay, so anyway, we'll fix that in a little bit. So let's take a look at the different timelines. And keep in mind, this is an overview. We have to establish an understanding of what took place, when it took place, how it took place, before we just start looking at scriptures. Because all of that comes into play as we're moving forward and trying to get a better understanding of what Paul was saying. All right? So the first timelines, I do have 8 timelines that we're going to take a look at. And can you guys see that? It's way too small. I was afraid of that. Can you see my cursor? All right. Right here, I did put it in red, is the book of Galatians. And according to this set of authors, it's under the New Bible Commentary for the 21st Century Edition. They say that Galatians was written sometime between 53 and 57 AD. All right? Now, taking a look at some other things, they're saying these authors have established that the book of James was the first book written in what we now call the New Testament, what I refer to as the apostolic writings. All right? And I have long contended, not that we're focusing on James, but I have long contended if the Bible were structured, at least the New Testament was structured, so that the first books that were available to those that they were written to in that order, we would have a totally different understanding of what is being said. Because we go from the Old Testament straight into James, and James says, it's not by faith alone. Show me your works. And of course, that has a negative connotation by the time you get to James in our apostolic writings, because all that's been done away with, supposedly. But if we started out in James, and James is saying, it's not just the faith, show me your works, I think we'd have a totally different understanding of what we're supposed to be doing. But that's a side story. We've gone over James in the past. But the point here with this timeline is Galatians shows to be the second book written. All right? So, timeline number 2. This is the New Testament introduction. And this author, again, James is the first book written. But this author also has Galatians as the second book, but he has the time frame from 49 to 50. Now, one progressively, there will be another slide that shows all these times all together so that we can see it. But all I want to really do is point out right here that, again, Galatians is the second book with 1st, 2nd Thessalonians in close procession to that, okay? Well, actually, they say 1st and 2nd was written in 49, and Galatians could have been written somewhere between 49 and 50, all right? So let's take a look at number 3. This is one author, Guide to Bible Data. Again, James is the first Bible, or the book in the apostolic writings. And then Galatians, this author says Galatians was written sometime between 48 and 49. So again, the first and second books in the New Testament, apostolic writings. All right? By the way, we could have looked at any of these. Lee, what was the Jude you were asking?
Yes, Jude.
Okay.
Next one down.
Move. Jude, there it is. So they say Jude was written 60 to 68, according to this author. Okay, and we won't go back to the other two. But over here is Revelation. It's kind of widely understood. Revelation was the last book of the Bible or of the apostolic writings. We'll take a look at those as we keep going. Timeline number 4. Is the commentary critical and explanatory on the whole Bible. They have Matthew written as or listed as the first apostolic writing, which is interesting. My whole college career or my college time in college getting my degrees, I was always told that Mark was the first of the Gospels that was written. And the other three were just copies of Mark, okay? But we have plenty of discussions about that. Notice that Galatians is way down here, multiple books. And the time frame is 54 to 57 AD for Galatians in this timeline. Jude.
The yellow. You were right there.
On it Jude, there. Right there, 70 to 80. Okay, I believe the last one was 60 to 70, I think, something like that. All right, timeline number 5, here we are. This one has Galatians as the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5th book in the apostolic writings. James is number 1 again. And by the way, James tends to be, I think there's only 3 that James isn't the first book written. Okay. Timeline number 6. Here's Galatians way down here at 55 AD. Here's another one. They have 1 Thessalonians as the first book. And James is right there. There's James. I put an arrow. So it's like, you know, whatever, however many that is. All right. Number 7. Here's Galatians. They say 1 and 2 Thessalonians. Now keep the Thessalonians in mind, because we're going to be looking at what Paul was doing when he was doing it, and I just can't see where Thessalonians would have been written before Galatians, but we'll cover that as we get to it, okay? And then we have James way down here. There's the arrow for James. And then the last timeline, we're back to James being number 1, Galatians being number 2. And this timeline has Galatians written in 48 AD, CE, one of those initials. All right, so as I said, here are the different times, okay, that everyone, I don't think, no one really agrees on a specific time. 48 here, and then 48, 49. This one's 49, 50. This one's 53 to 57, 54 to 57, 53 to 50. So it's somewhere in that time frame. But basically, the earliest that these timelines establish that Galatians could have been written was 48 CE, and the earliest was 48, latest would have been 57, somewhere in that range. So that's what, 10 years, 9 years that we're talking about. So as I said before in the overview, what does this mean? As I was going through this process, if you just look at Galatians and try to decipher the story, you're not going to get the whole picture. Paul talks about some pre-events, but the best book to go to get all of these pre-events is the book of Acts. All right? So look at Acts 9 and 18 through 20, and it reads, "Immediately there fell from his eyes something like scales, and he received his sight at once. He arose, was baptized. When he had received food, was strengthened. Then Shaul, spent some days with the disciples at Damascus." And then that word again, immediately, it's the same word as the scales immediately fell off. He immediately, again, preached the Christ in the synagogues that he is the Son of God. Okay? So as soon as he got strengthened and everything, his first inclination was to go out and to start preaching. But what about Galatians? What does Paul say that he did? And we're following up in Galatians, and this is picking up. You know, he received his sight, and to reveal his Son in me, this is the Damascus Road conversion, okay? "That I might preach him among the Gentiles, I did not immediately," same word, "immediately confer with flesh and blood, nor did I go up to Jerusalem to those who were apostles before me, but I went to Arabia and returned again to Damascus. Then after 3 years, I went up to Jerusalem to see Peter and remained with him 15 days. Now, just reading this, we think that he went off to Arabia for 3 years. But if you go back to Acts, what we just read, it said that he immediately went out preaching in Damascus and in Arabia. And then Paul says, I went after 3 years of preaching, Damascus, preaching, Arabia, I went back to Damascus and then eventually made it back to Jerusalem. And then I conferred with Peter for 15 days. Didn't talk to anyone else. Talked to Peter for 15 days before he went to see the elders, okay, the Jerusalem council, and discuss what was going on. And we read all of that in the book of Acts. And see, the problem is, when we read Acts, just like when we read the four Gospels, you know, we, for instance, just grabbing an example from the Gospels, the crucifixion of Yeshua. We read about the crucifixion in a matter of, you know, if you read the whole thing from the beginning, the Garden of Gethsemane, all the way to it is finished, we can read that in about 15, 20 minutes. And in our minds, we're thinking, wow, that was boom, 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 boom. No, that was almost a 24-hour period that stuff was taking place. Okay, not 24 hours, but you get my gist. It was, you know, he hung on the cross for 6 hours. That's not something that you read and say, he was here at noon, this happened, then it is finished, and, you know, 5 minutes later, we're done with that events that took 6 hours to take place. And the same thing, the point being, the same thing when we read through Acts, we read through it and not realize that the book of Acts is covering multiple years that took place, and Luke is just giving a synopsis of the main events that took place and how they went about. Okay? So, looking at the book of Acts, we go to Acts 9, and here is what I just told you guys. Paul preaches in Damascus and in Arabia for 3 years, after which the Jews plot to kill him. Okay, just a synopsis and going through this. Now, I can remember when I first came into this walk, I never paid attention to this portion before about what happened to Paul and why he did it and all like that in my previous Christian walk. But when I came into this walk, I remember someone saying, oh yeah, when Paul was converted, he went to Arabia with Peter for 3 years to figure out, you know, basically taking off his rabbinic paradigm glasses and putting on his Yeshuic paradigm glasses and making sense of everything. But that's, again, that's not what the text says, okay? We just walk through the whole process. He immediately started preaching. So the question now is, when did Paul go to Galatia? And this is where I put in that slide interlude, because we have to, I want to talk about Arabia. It's like, okay, we're focusing on Galatia and what he wrote to Galatians, but what did he do in Arabia, and where in the world is Arabia? So can you see this map? Is that okay? All right. So this map is basically telling us the dispersion of the Jews in the first century A.D. This is what it looked like, okay? Over here is Lydia. Here's Sidon, well, that's Cyprus here. The Sidon is one of the cities. Here's Antioch, and we're going to discuss that in just a few minutes. Down here is Jerusalem. Here's Egypt. And then Mesopotamia is over here, and the Parthian Empire is over here. So this is basically where the Jews were dispersed, and this is what it looked like in the first century. All right? Now, if you notice in this map, down here, this whole section down here is considered Arabia. Kind of a big area for Paul to be going to, right? All right. Why Arabia? Well, as you saw on the map, that covers a wide area, so the exact location where Paul went, we really don't know. It doesn't say anywhere, but there is speculation. Paul considered himself as zealous, okay? And I put in there a zealot, okay? And there is, you can be zealous for something, but was he actually, did he go to that point of being a zealot? And I would offer that, yes, he was a zealot. Because what was he doing before his conversion? He was going out, finding those Christians, and killing them. And that's what zealots did. Okay, the Latin word is sicarius. Okay? Which is an assassin. A zealot, that's where that word comes from. Okay? So Paul was zealous for the word to the point of going out and assassinating the people that he felt were against what he believed. We kind of talked about that just when Lee, he made this change. I'm like, dang, is he looking at my notes? He's that article that you were writing, we have to be tolerant of everyone. I'm like, yeah, well, Paul, he finally got the understanding. Not that he was, well, anyway, I don't want to go down that road. So there's also this Phineas. Remember Phineas in the Torah? Who was Pincus? We call him Phineas. Remember the incident where
in the tent.
One of the Jewish men took a Moabite woman, flaunted her in front of Moses and everyone, took her into the tent, and during their interlude, Pincus says, enough of this, and he goes in and spears them, kebabs them both with the spear, right? Pincus, first zealot, and God blessed him, did he not? Okay?
Where are you getting that?
What am I getting what?
The first zealot.
I'm sorry?
Just because he killed somebody, he's the first zealot?
This is the progression. I don't think that at that time he was considered a zealot, but in later generations, looking back, you see where I'm going?
Yeah, I see.
Okay? And I'm just telling you stuff that I have been collecting, and this is, people are saying that Paul in his time, the zealots, the Sicarius, okay, they tied themselves back to Phinehas and Elijah, because Elijah, did he not kill all of those Baal worshipers? Where's your God? And they stood there all day waiting for their gods to bring fire down. And then when it was Elijah's turn, the fire came down, consumed all. See? So the first century Sicarius, the zealots, tied themselves back to Pincus and to Elijah.
Why is that critical?
I'm just telling you what's out there. And how Paul is possibly in that vein of killing people. That's all I'm trying to get to. Is, yes, he calls himself zealous, and he is it as far as a zealot. Well, he did go out and kill people he didn't agree with. Okay? Which kind of brings up kind of a side trail here. Judas Iscariot, Sicarius. He was a zealot. He was an assassin. And his betrayal of Yeshua, don't think that he was truly betraying Yeshua, understanding it was going to be for his death. What he was trying to do, what the zealots were trying to do, was to bring the kingdom to the earth now. And he was trying to prod Yeshua, let's get this kingdom thing going. And so he thought that by telling the Romans and the Jewish leaders where he was at, that Yeshua would have to establish his kingdom, not understanding that he was the Messiah ben Yosef suffering versus the Messiah ben David. Okay? And so when he realized, Judas, that is, realized that, oh no, he didn't establish his kingdom, he realized what he had done and he went and committed suicide. But his whole thing as a zealot was to try to bring the kingdom to earth now. Jesus, you're not doing it on my timeline. Let's do this. That's what I feel is happening. But of course, the way it's written and understood today was that he was just betraying Yeshua to be killed. I don't think so. Okay? But he was, you know, Iscariot.
This is your opinion.
I'm sorry?
How much of all this is your opinion?
I told you at the very beginning.
It's all about opinion.
Judas. Don't look at me with that tone of voice.
So, why is that going to indicate that he's in a particular area of Arabia?
Well, we're going to get there eventually. Okay? So, Paul, he was a zealous Pharisee. That's what his words were. Does this lead, as a Pharisee, there are two schools of thought, the Hillel and the Shammai, right? So was he a Shammite? Shammai, were they more, not saying that they were the zealots, but were they more prone to doing it my way or the highway, whereas Hillel was a little bit more lenient and understanding, more passionate with people as they were coming in. You guys have heard the story about the Roman who went to Shammai and said, teach me everything I need to know about Judaism while I'm standing on one foot. And Shammai got a stick and beat him and said, how dare you insult me and try to belittle everything that I believe in. Well, the Roman was not so put off by all of that, so he goes to Hillel and says the same thing. Hillel, tell me everything, teach me everything I need to know about Judaism, the law, while I stand on one foot. And Hillel looked at him with passion and said, how you want to be treated, treat others. The rest is commentary. Go study it. Difference, and that's just the way that it's been understood, Shammai versus Hillel. Shammai is very aggressive. Hillel is more understanding, passive, but they want you to learn Torah. Okay? As an example. Okay? So, Was Paul a Shemite? Don't know. He just says he was a Pharisee. A Pharisee of Pharisees. Don't know what school. Well, actually, we do. What school did he say he studied under?
Gamaliel.
And Gamaliel, now that I'm thinking about it, was he not Hillel? He was. Okay, so I'm going to have to correct that. See what happens when you stay up late at night? Okay. In the tradition of Elijah, Paul went to Sinai. What happened after the destruction of the false prophets? He went off, and he eventually went off by himself. But Elijah went to Sinai to converse with God. So this is all I'm saying here is what people think. There's no proof. But when it says, I went to Arabia, there's the thought that Paul also went to Sinai to get his paradigm glasses adjusted. Okay? But again, the scripture says that he went and he preached, both in Damascus and Arabia. All right. So anyway, we're going to dissect this and look at this a lot more in depth as we progress through Galatians in the chapters going through the process, okay? So I'm just touching on things at this point. So back to Galatia. Acts 13. Now keep in mind, Acts 11, it talks about Barnabas being in Antioch, and then Barnabas comes back and gets Paul and convinces him to go back to Antioch with him. And in chapter 13, okay, Paul and Barnabas are in Antioch, Pisidia. And let's see here. This would be what is considered Paul's first missionary journey. We have to understand that there are numerous Antiochs. And I do have a video. The link is here. Let me pull up this video. There it is, way down here.
Antioch in Pisidia.
Can you see that? Is that up there yet? Okay, I didn't think it was. Let me get this over there for you. All right, here we go. We're going to watch two different things from this video. The first one's only about 10 seconds or so.
The good news comes to a colony of Rome. According to the 13th chapter of the book of Acts, Paul and Barnabas were commissioned by the church in Syrian Antioch to go out as missionaries. They first preached the gospel throughout the island of Cyprus and then sailed to the mainland, arriving at Perga. They journeyed along the Via Sebaste, or Augustan Road, north to the city of Antioch near Pisidia, a city that would become an important landmark in the map of Paul's missionary work.
Okay, now this is Antioch Pisidius, okay, or Pisidia, but over here there's another Antioch, and you'll see it in additional maps I'm going to be showing you here in just a few seconds. This is Syria, and there's an Antioch here. And there were multiple cities called Antioch, okay? So just wanted you to understand. Yeah, we're back. Okay. Here is the first missionary journey. So right up here, wait,
where's my cursor?
Can you see my cursor now?
Yes.
Yes?
Okay,
so here's Syria, Antioch. Over here is Antioch, Pisidia, way over here. All right, so Paul is up here. He comes down to Cyprus, comes on over, Perga, everything. Here's Antioch, and we will be taking a look here at what all of this means in just a little bit. All right. But that's basically his first missionary journey. Right here, it's kind of hard to see in this graphic, but there's Galatia. All right? It's just a large area. Just like this is Pamphylia. Here's Lycia, at least on this map. Here's Cyprus. And then we jump to Acts 16. And the reason I do this is Acts 16 is the only time that it specifically states, at least in Acts, that he went to, of course, in Galatians, he's talking to the people of Galatia, but this is the only time that it talks about him specifically going to Galatia. And this is in chapter 16, all right? So the emphasis I'm trying to put here is we're trying to determine when Paul went to Galatia. And if we go back to the map, we see that he was in the Galatia area right here, Lystra, Iconium, Derbe, and again, the second portion of the video I'm going to show you will discuss this, but just to show it to you, those are the cities in the Galatia area. Here in chapter 16, it literally, well, here it talks about the cities, Derbe, Lystra, Phrygia, Galatia, and goes through, but that's the only time that it actually talks about it. So here's the second portion. Let me see if I can get the video. There's the video. All right. That's where we're going to pick up. By the way, this is a 12-minute video. And the link, you can watch the whole thing, but there's just a bunch of middle stuff that wasn't really pertinent to what I wanted to talk about today. But when you get the click on the link down the road, by all means, watch all 12 minutes. Kind of interesting, but this is the stuff I wanted to pull out.
As individuals and collectively as municipalities, sacrificed unremittingly at these shrines on behalf of my health, which included the Augusteum in Antioch and its surrounding shrines. In another place, Augustus recalls how in Africa, Sicily, Macedonia, the two Spanish provinces, Achaia, Asia, Syria, Narbonian Gaul, and Pisidia, I settled colonies of soldiers. Pisidian Antioch was one such colony. The prominence of the imperial cult and of the ideology of the emperors that the cult represented suggests that Paul's audience would have heard significantly political overtones in his sermon. Paul speaks of the message of this salvation concerning
tie back into your article
and whom Paul identifies as a savior in a world that already hailed Augustus as savior and together with his successors sons of the divine. Paul and Barnabas were driven out of Pisidian Antioch by the leaders of the Jewish community in concert with the governing authorities and journeyed on east along the Via Sebaste to Iconium and Lystra, making a short detour to Derbe as well. Paul would visit Antioch again on his way back from Derbe to Perga. It's highly probable that the author of Acts imagines Paul visiting Pisidian Antioch yet again when he speaks of Paul, Timothy, and Silas traveling through Phrygia and Galatia in Acts 16, verse 6. In the early phases on Paul's second missionary
journey, hold on.
Paul would visit the congregation here a fourth time.
Then, four times he went to here.
The third missionary journey to Ephesus as he passes again through Phrygia and Galatia, strengthening all the disciples, as the author of Acts writes in chapter 18, verse 23. Although a matter of debate, many scholars believe that Paul's letter to the Galatians was addressed to the congregation of Pisidian Antioch and its sister cities in Lystra and Iconium. If this accounting is correct, it would make Pisidian Antioch as important a hub for the Pauline mission as it was for the imperial highway system and imperial cult that put the city squarely on the Roman map.
Okay. So, did you see the different Lystra, Derbe, everything like that? All of that is in the Galatia area. And that's what is assumed is where Paul, those are the churches that Paul was writing to in that area of Galatia, okay? With Antioch Pisidia being the key location. He went back there, according to them, four times. All right? Next question is, where's Waldo? Where's Galatia? All right, we've already been taking a look at this. Now, this map here is the Roman Empire at the time of Yeshua's birth. Okay? So, I don't know if you guys can read some of these. One caught my attention, Londinium, over here in Britannia. Okay? So, Londinium. I wonder what that city is now. right? But anyway, some really cool names in here. Notice this area right here. Can you read that? Asia. That's what's considered Asia. Okay, when we talk about Asia today, we're talking about
India,
China, Asia. But that's not what is considered Asia at this time. Okay, it's right there in that little area. Right there is Galatia. This is Antioch. This is the Syria, Antioch. Over here, no, this one doesn't show it. Here's Philippopolis and Corinthus, and here's Rome. Okay, so anyway, these are all just the Roman Empire in this time frame. The video said in this three Spanish sections right here, those are the three Spanish areas. Okay, the next map just kind of, whoops, I didn't mean to do that. Can you see that? Yeah, that's a little bit better. So right here is Antioch Pisidia, Antioch Syria, and then Lystra is here. This is the area of Galatia. And then this is Paul's secondary missionary journey, or second. And remember on the timelines, I said keep the Thessalonians in mind. On the first missionary trip, Thessalonia wasn't in there anywhere. Okay? But this, on the second one, Thessalonica is right here. There's an arrow going down to it. He went to Thessalonians. And so I'm kind of looking at those timelines. I'm like, how in the world are they saying that Paul wrote to the church of Thessalonica when he didn't even go there until many years later? I guess it's possible he heard of those churches and wrote to them. But if he had never visited there, the letters are personal. I've told you, I've talked to you, I've done, you know. It just doesn't make any sense that those timelines would put Thessalonians before, as well, at least as the first letters to in the New Testament, the apostolic writings. Just my taking a look at it, okay? So again, we come back here. You would think that Paul would have written the letter after he went to Galatia. According to Galatians 1:6, the Galatians turned very soon after Paul's departure. That's what Paul says. We don't know how soon is, but apparently it was soon enough that it got Paul's attention. He's like, why are you believing other things that you... I told you what the truth is. Okay? So based on what we have seen, Paul visited Galatia on his first trip. And he did go back, as we learned in the video, four different times. And then his letter was written shortly afterwards. That's an assumption, but it kind of makes sense that that's what would have happened. And then he returned back to on his second trip. So, what's next? This lesson is to lay a foundation just to kind of understand where Paul was, where Galatia is, all right? We're going to refer back to this information as we go through the book of Galatians, okay? I don't want you to think this is a one and done deal. No way. We are going to build on what we have learned here, and we're going to just keep expanding. But I just wanted to lay the foundation today. And so, as a review, we've seen the timelines. We've asked what it means. Well, where's Waldo? Where's Galatia? The interlude discussing about Arabia, and then what's going to be happening next in future teachings. On those, we are actually going to take those verse by verse with the understanding of what happened when and where it all happened. We can now better move forward and say, okay, this is why Paul said this. At least that's my plan of attack, okay? So, questions?
So far, have you run into anybody that has said anything about any details regarding the different gospel other than what's found in the book of Galatians? I guess the reason that I'm asking is because as I'm reading through the early church fathers, I'm finding it shocking how quickly they have turned from what they had been taught.
Oh, yeah.
And even if this is the first book written, and they were already turning away.
Right. Galatians 1:6. That's what he says. How soon you have turned away.
Can you define your question, guys?
Well, part of it is just, you know, like, I'm wanting to know, well, what were they taught? I mean, later in the book, obviously, they're talking about the, you know, how to walk in the Spirit, and how, you know, or actually, it's really a thing of walking in obedience versus disobedience, you know. But I'm wondering, since it's saying that they have followed a different gospel, what that is. Or somehow the gospel was perverted, it says in verse 6.
Right, and we're going to attack all of that, lay it out as we get to each one of those, but
maybe there's, you've run into some names that pop up. Can we anticipate something like that, maybe, or not?
You can anticipate it, but I'm not going to tell you about it now.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to go through, and the number of books that Lee has given me is very
extensive,
numerous. And, of course, I have stuff, and I've got stuff on my Bible software. I've been going, pouring through all of that, and as we go through each one of the verses and just lay it out, I don't anticipate future lessons being as quick as this one. This one's just laying a foundation, again, just to discuss. Now we know where Galatia is. And as we go through chapter 1, we're going to, why was he saying what he said? There's a lot of issues that we have to discuss.
And you had indicated that you had like a composite timeline of all the books when they were written?
All those eight. Those eight, they had all of the books. Each one had their variation on when they were.
But you don't have one that encompasses all of them, I guess. I guess I misunderstood.
Oh, the summary at the end, just saying when the book of Galatians was written. Right. Right. I didn't do that with all of the books, no.
Is there one of the eight that you feel might be better than the others? Obviously, I think you're dropping out the ones that say First Thessalonians first.
Yeah, I would drop those. And there's two of those, I think, that have Thessalonians before Galatian. And it's like, okay, I don't understand why they would do that. Okay?
Can you send those to me?
Sure.
Okay, I'd love to have them.
I'll give them to Lee, and Lee can send them out to everyone.
I'm going to put the information, the standard information, on my website, so I can put a link.
Okay.
Okay.
And then
I
can
do something that everybody can
kind of adding.
Daryl.
So on slide 15, you were saying something about Peter going with Paul. I'm not sure.
Oh, that was slide 15. What I was saying when I first came into this walk, I was told that when Paul converted, and it had to do with me first coming into this walk, and, you know, well, you should use Paul's example. He went off into Arabia with Peter, and, you know, I was like, oh, okay, well, that's interesting. But then as you actually look at it, that's not what the story says. It says he went to Arabia and then came back to Peter and spent 15 days with Peter. And maybe I misunderstood what the person was talking about, but I'm just relaying back when I first came into this walk, that's what I was told, that Paul went off to Arabia with Peter so that he could get his Yeshuic understanding paradigm glasses on. Okay? That's all I was saying there. I at the time I didn't know to say, oh, wait, that's not what it says. But as I'm going through this and putting the stories together from those different sources, it's like, no, that's not what happened. Okay? Other questions? Go for it.
I think you laid out the geopolitical backdrop pretty well here, briefly anyway, about what's going on. Especially, I think I found it interesting that I hadn't thought about that before. When you look at Caesar and all of his following groups of folks that were in the Roman Empire, and how they were also seen as saviors, if you will, I hadn't thought about that. But I'm curious about the book of Galatians, unlike a lot of the other epistles, don't necessarily lay out the specific reasons, and you've already talked about this briefly. You've got Paul going back there several times for some reason and then writing letters, or at least there's a letter about it. I'm just curious, at least initially from a geopolitical standpoint, if you will, and social, all the stuff that goes into what potentially influences the synagogues that were there, those assemblies that were there, how much do you think, opinion-wise, was infractions was caused by rabbinic teaching as opposed to the surrounding secular Roman influences? And this area here, too, until you saw the map again, I didn't think about it. I mean, this is really the center of Greek culture.
Yes.
What became Rome. Where it is in Greece. I mean, and that's why it's interesting. Some of it's Turkey.
I mean,
Galatia sits in Turkey, but its proximity to Thessalonica, you said before.
Right, and Corinth.
I got a theory on why you would have seen those letters potentially written earlier. The theory would be, why would people from Thessalonica have been over in that area doing things commerce-wise, attended assembly there, and then he wrote letters? That's obviously an aside. It's not a big world even then. But to the point, what is the major infractions outside of really just not following the teachings of the Messiah there, and what's influencing that most, I think? Is it how much more of it's rabbinic teaching, and how much of it is secular influence on the synagogues?
Yes, and I think that's the key issue there, is the secular influence, which goes back to the zealots. They were the ones that, no, we need to stick strictly to this so that we can bring about the kingdom now, okay? And the article that Lee gave us to read today, I was just like, this ties in so perfectly, because each group is saying that our way is the best, and then there are those, and within each one of those groups, you have those that, oh, we need to be open to this, we need to be open to these people, they can come in and they can partake with us, and you start diluting what is supposed to be done. And then when we're coming to what God says to do, there is one way. When you are in covenant with God, this is the way you are to behave. And we're seeing that secular influence, and you saw up here, as you said, they had their saviors and everything, and all of a sudden, these people are coming and saying, hey, we actually have a Messiah, and he's going to establish a kingdom. And that's a threat to the Roman kingdom from their perspective. So a lot comes into play with all of this. Dan?
I'm curious to know how many Jews were actually in that area. From the diaspora, deportations,
going back to the destruction of the first temple, how many Jews ended up there, and what the Jewish population was in those areas at the time?
I have not at this time come across anything that says what the Jewish population is. I don't know that it's out there, but I haven't seen it at this point. I can, see if there is something out there that talks about it. But remember, this is the diaspora, and they're all, the lost tribes. Not that they were really lost. They knew where they were. They just weren't in Israel where they were supposed to be.
Is that map that you showed, can you put that up again? And was that
Which one? The Roman Empire?
The one with the ink on it, where, you know, the diaspora?
That one?
No.
Keep going back.
That's the Roman Empire. Wait. Okay, that's not working. Whatever I was doing was not working. This is the one you want.
So, yeah, that one, was that where the 10 tribes were spread out after they were taken off to Assyria?
No, this says, if you read the little key down here, it says this is the greatest concentration of Jewish population at that time frame in the first century.
Because where you got that map, is that a Logos map?
Yeah, I have all the citations and everything. If you need it, I can send it to you. But I was going to scan down on the map, but I can't do that. it's a set map. If you know, the diaspora made it all the way up into Europe, Northern Europe, and everything as well, and you know, east.
You know, I guess what I'm, you know, thinking and formulating as I'm looking at this is, you know, a lot of times when we're talking about the early church, we're thinking about it. We're thinking about those who fled Jerusalem to go to Pella or Petra, you know, we're talking about. And we're not thinking about these people.
When you say church, you're talking about when Christianity began and the persecutions in Israel against those believers, and not understanding that we're talking about the ecclesia, okay, which is the congregations, and there were congregations, and there were Jewish synagogues throughout the diaspora, throughout all of these different areas. Paul went to the synagogue. The scripture clearly says that he went to the synagogues and spoke.
Well, yeah, I realize that. Well, what I'm thinking of, I guess, is how much of these areas were, that those churches were mixtures of Jews and Gentiles, were they predominantly Gentile, predominantly Jewish at some point?
No, I based on the stories in Acts, the issue was, are we going to allow the Gentiles to come in? So in all of these places, they had the synagogues, and the synagogues were for the Jews only. And it wasn't until Paul and Peter made their arguments that, oh yeah, we do need to. And if they do, this is what's going to happen. Okay? Now, in the letters, Paul says that he was in the synagogues, he was kicked out, and I can't remember which letter this was, but then he went out, and even the Gentiles came to listen to him, and the crowds got larger at what he was teaching. Okay? So the synagogues were Jewish only at that time. Dan?
Well, of course, whenever we use English terms, we end up oftentimes getting further away from the culture of the day.
Agreed.
Yeah, well, when we use the word Gentile, I mean, it's the Greek word means nations.
Which ties back to goy in Hebrew.
Correct. So, I mean, Paul, you know, I mean, there are people who have made the case. I don't know that I necessarily agree with it or not, but certainly, you know, I think it's a plausible argument that when Paul uses the word nations, he could just as easily be talking about Jews in the diaspora who have been Hellenized, and he could be calling them back to their roots and saying, "Guys, wake up! You know, you're in the culture, you're meshed in the culture. Get out." So, you know, when you use the word Jews and Gentiles, we don't even think that. That doesn't even come into our mind because we're thinking, "Oh, these are people." Well, that may not necessarily be the case.
No, that's a great point. And the reason why is because, fast forward to today's context, if you're in the church as a Catholic, Christian, whatever the massive flavors of Catholicism and Protestantism are, And you all of a sudden decide, I'm not partaking, now you're probably not even, you might be just considered an apostate, but more importantly, you'd be probably called an agnostic or somebody who's atheist because you don't believe anymore. But you would still right now carry out that church experience, a whole lot of other things you probably are still doing. You're going to take the doctrines and theologies of love, others, away from that. You may not understand how to love God anymore, care about God anymore, but you're doing those things. But I think that's a great analogy, too, and I think maybe that's a... I just thought about that, but when you state that in this particular context, you may be speaking of, again, just a broad group of people who are not part of the assembly, as opposed to trying to stack them up into somebody who's doing Jewish traditions and then those who are out there doing all of the other traditions of secular weirdness that are outside the gates, or religious and secular weirdness that are outside the gates that are there. That's a good point, I mean.
It is a good point, but even, I don't know. I'll have to look into it.
Well, one of the things that, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, as I'm looking at the New Testament, as I'm studying the early church fathers, and also looking at the separation, there were two separations that essentially happened. One being the mainline Jews that comprise a lot of different sects from the believing in Yeshua, you know, that group separating from each other, which happened over a long period of time. And then also another separation that occurred, that being the Jewish believers from the Gentile believers, okay? Initially, what we had was the Jews being believers. Then the Gentile believers were brought together with them.
Right.
And then there was a separation again. You know, and when I'm trying to think of all these dynamics, you know, and trying to understand everything, and trying to figure out, you know, a lot of things in context when I'm looking at this, and how it may have changed and evolved and things like that. And so I think I'm going to have to, I don't have a particular question, it's just that I have all these things that I'm formulating in my mind, and I can't even figure out what the right question is to ask. And I don't know if we're ever going to cover anything that might help with that. But being able to visually see where some of these places are and what they're doing, I think, would be helpful. So, you know, as you, you know, move forward, if you can always have a map in there. You know, I mean, I know we've always had maps in the backs of Bibles and stuff like that, but a lot of times we don't even look at that stuff. But I think that we need to be looking at some of it as we're moving forward.
Oh, yeah, I plan on, you know, keep referring, if you remember, and I'll put the map back in and kind of as it's needed. Okay? Don't know that you really asked a question in that,
no,
just
I'm
talking
just,
out loud.
I'm talking out loud, I'm formulating.
Okay.
I guess so.
All right, then. Well, if there are no other questions, I'm going to stop the recorder. Thank you for your time.